Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another edition of College Football Insiders Radio. I am back after a week off. I think Bo held his own last week filling in. It's almost time for the bowls, baby, folks. It's almost time for games. We've had some time off with no football, but on Saturday we got a couple bowls, starting with the New Mexico Bowl featuring Fresno State and Wyoming, as well as the St. Petersburg Bowl featuring Rutgers against Central Florida to kick it off. And also this weekend we got the New Orleans Bowl, followed by the Las Vegas Bowl and the Poinsettia Bowl, which will set us up until next week. We will also go over the Heisman Trophy and how that went down. I was there along with one of my cohorts, Ralph Mancini, who will be joining us in a second. Also calling in will be Kenny Franick, our BCS Buster Insider, to go over those bowl games, as well as our Pac-10 guru and Super Scout, Kel Ron Sykes. He'll tell us how Cal and Oregon State will fare against those Mountain West Conference opponents. And also we have today Coach Kyle Whittingham, who will be coaching one of those teams from the Utah Utes. We have an interview recorded with him from earlier this morning, as well as an interview with Mr. Joe Shad from ESPN. We spoke to him at the Marriott Marquis on location at the Heisman Trophy after that award was given out, and talking a little Heisman as well as general college football. He's one of those ESPN insiders that gets all those good scoops, and he'll join us on the show later today. But with us right now is our very own insider, Mr. Ralph Mancini, the Reverend, they like to call him. And with me today, I almost forgot, is my brother Christopher Mogollon joining me, co-hosting today. Ralph, how's it going today, buddy?
Hey, how's it going? Everything's fine over here.
All right, Ralph. You know, we were there at the Heisman Trophy on Saturday. Let me ask you to start off, what was the lasting impression you got from the whole ceremony? What kind of stood out to you on Saturday?
You know, what stood out to me was just Mark Ingram's raw emotions. You know, I mean, he was the youngest candidate out of everybody that was there, out of the five players that were there that night. And it just kind of, I guess, refreshing to see somebody just, overwhelmed by the whole thing. He had time to prepare for it, and there was all going on for weeks and even months for some of these guys. But, you know, until it doesn't happen, until you don't get that trophy in your hands sometimes, you know, it's really something that you really can't prepare for. So I just enjoyed, watching Ingram just break down and be humble and very appreciative of the award itself.
Yeah, that's a good point, Ralph. I mean, not to knock the other guys, but, you know, Tim Tebow, Colt McCoy, those guys are so polished, and they've spoken to the media a gazillion times. These guys probably have spoken to the media more than, you know, professional athletes did in their careers in the 70s and 80s, maybe even the 90s. So, you know, they know what to say. They know what question's coming, but we did get a rare look at raw, true emotions from Ingram. And even though it wasn't prepared, he still was pretty smooth. You know, he wasn't doing a lot of pauses or ahings, and you know, he was well spoken for a young man.
No, he was. And, you know, really what the Heisman Trophy should be about is consistency. And the one thing that I do hate about the whole process is the fact that overhyped these guys from the summer into September before we even get a chance to watch these guys perform. And I think that's what works against a lot of these other people who, you know, might not be the household names that the Tim Tebows and the Colt McCoys might be.
We are here talking college football on College Football Insiders Radio, brought to you by All Access Football Radio. Thanks to the Fantasy Sports Channel for having us on. You can check out more fantasy news at fsc.fm. That's fsc.fm, the Fantasy Sports Channel, always bringing you fantasy news. And if you want to call in and talk Heisman or talk some balls, the number is 347-945-6275. And if you're a little shy, don't worry. Jump in the chat room. I'm right there.
Hey, how you doing, Ralph? This is Chris.
Hey, Chris. What's up?
I got a question about some of the other players in the Heisman ballot also. If you could just comment on two guys, Gerhardt and how he finished second. Was it kind of a moral victory for where he was at the start of the season and which school he plays for, the fact that he finished second and first place in the West? And were you also surprised about where Tim Tebow finished?
Gerhardt, that's Ralph's guy.
Yeah. I love everything about Gerhardt. You know, you're talking about not only somebody who performs on the field, but a very smart individual who actually took 21 credits this past semester. So that's pretty impressive in and of itself. But
more than I ever took.
Yeah, well, same here. You know, I thought 18 was, you know, magical, but, you know, 21 is just unheard of. But, you know, I have to say overall, yeah, was it impressive for Gerhardt to come in second? I think it was. I mean, considering where he came from at the beginning of the season, you know, nobody really expected him even to be mentioned among, you know, even like the top 10 vote-getters for the Heisman race. So, you know, the impression that he, I guess, cast upon me and others that were there that night is the fact that he's a bright kid, doesn't like to talk about himself. You know, when you ask him questions about, you know, his feelings and his impressions and his observations about himself and accomplishments, he really was very, very short, very curt, and very to the point. Whereas when you ask him about some of his coaches, some of his fellow players or fellow Heisman candidates, he really went on. It was very complimentary of the other players that were there that night. So that really showed me something. And the other thing is, you know, I also had a chance to ask him about, you know, his NFL future. And, you know, I wanted to just, you know, whether or not he's prepared for what awaits him in a few months. And to me, he seems like a guy got a very good head on his shoulders. He does realize that big physical backs like himself usually don't have a very long shelf life in the NFL. But he's come to terms with that. And he's also come to terms with the fact that he is somebody that needs to improve in certain areas and certain things. You know, I asked him, how does he compare himself to some other guys? I mean, you know, naturally you look at him play and automatically, you know, compare him to somebody like a Mike Allstott. But he's like, he actually said that he would rather be more like somebody like a Bo Jackson, somebody maybe who's more elusive in the open field. And when I asked him specifically what he needs to refine his game at the next level to be successful, he said that he wants to be able to acquire or pick up some more like second-level moves to go past the DB, to go past the safety. And so overall, I just got a kick out of him. I thought he's very bright, very humble, a great guy. And as far as Tebow goes, to answer your second question, I wasn't surprised that he came in fifth place. I mean, quite honestly, I thought, you know, he was lucky just to be there in New York. I mean, I thought there were other more worthy players, more deserving of the award than Mr. Tebow was, considering the fact that he did get injured during the year, and really his numbers were not outstanding, I don't think.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, Ralph. I mean, I think Tebow and to a lesser extent McCoy, you know, if it wasn't for their names and their reputations and the hype from the last couple of years leading into this season, I don't think they would have been there at all. Ralph, no reference to touchdown Tommy Vardell, huh? The Gerhardt didn't bring him up?
No. He did bring up his coach. He brought up Jim Harbaugh. He brought up a few other guys, but no mention of Vardell.
I guess you don't want to follow a first-round buck, right?
Yeah, all I remember from touchdown Tommy, I remember he had like a big two-touch game. I forgot who it was against. It might have been against Detroit. But other than that, I don't remember much what he did in the NFL.
Now, how about my man, Ndamukong Suh from Nebraska, who I thought should have won? What do you think? Where do you think he should have finished? And just your thoughts on him even getting invited to New York and finishing fourth. Hopefully schools, I think Tennessee did it this year with Eric Berry. Hopefully schools will start promoting these guys as well, and the media will open up their eyes a little bit and realize this isn't just an offensive skill player award.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think, you know, although a lot of people, as yourself, wanted him to finish first and to get the award, you know, I think it was just an accomplishment for him just to make it within the first five, to make it as third place. Because, you know, really, I mean, you never really even think or fathom that a defensive player, especially a lineman, even be considered to be a Heisman finalist. And so, you know, he at least, you know, kind of changed, you know, people's way of viewing things a little bit. So maybe, you know, down the road in the future, maybe in another year or two, if there is another suit that comes out that emerges, it maybe will actually win a trophy.
I have a question, Ralph, not just about the players, but actually about the award itself. Do you think in the voting process there is some sort of criteria of, rather than voting for the best player in college football, it's more like let's vote for the most the best offensive player on a high percentage winning team, on a highly ranked team?
Well, you know, look, I don't have a problem with voters picking or selecting a particular guy because he is on a good team. I mean, that's fine. I really don't have a problem with that. I mean, you know, guys on winning teams, these are guys that we see most frequently. But you know, the thing that I want to focus on is just consistency. You know, I mean, if it were up to me, I would have probably included guys like a Marty Beard, maybe like in the top five guys that actually made it to New York. I would have included maybe a guy like even a Case Keenum, who was very consistent throughout the year. So I just think, as I said before, I think all the hype that you hear about certain players at the beginning of the year or even before the season starts, I think that really hurts the guys that really deserve the award.
You threw out a couple of names there. Give us your top couple of snubs, guys that you thought maybe should have been there ahead of some of the players that were there.
Yeah, I definitely think Marty Gilliard is a guy that I would have put in my top five. And so Golden Tate. Now, I know that Notre Dame doesn't have a good team or didn't have a good team this past year. But, you know, here's a guy that, again, did it week in, week out and really showed the stuff that he's made of when Malcolm Floyd went down with an injury. And he, during most weeks, you know, a lot of times just carried that offense on his back along with the quarterback, Jimmy Clausen. And so Case Keenum, obviously, is another guy I would have put up there in my top five. So I think those are probably those three guys are probably the players that I would put in the top five. I wouldn't have had any problem with that whatsoever.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Ralph. Sometimes it comes down to how much more PR you get than TDs. And I like both your guys, especially Gilliard, because when you watch Cincinnati play, you can see how much of an impact he is, you know, in the Pittsburgh game, not only as an offensive player, but as a special teams player.
Yeah.
I will say this, though.
By the way, I also wanted to add Jay Spiller was the other guy I wanted to include into the equation.
Yeah, I will say this, though, guys. I mean, Houston was pushing Keenum a lot to the media. Maybe in the outside, the public didn't see it, but, you know, there were a lot of email blasts, and he was available in conference calls on a weekly basis. So they were pushing him towards the media. My five, what I would have had would have been Sue 1, Gerhardt 2, Ingram 3, Spiller 4, and a guy we haven't mentioned yet, Kellen Moore out of Boise State 5, who I think has like 39 touchdown passes with like 4 interceptions, leading a team to an undefeated record. So I'm not sure what, you know, guys like Tebow and Colt McCoy did that Kellen Moore didn't do. I understand they're playing different competition, but, you know, he also doesn't have Shipley to throw to. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't have the same offensive line that Florida has. So, you know, to me that's kind of mixing it up, but I think a guy like him should have gotten some consideration. I think Spiller finished sixth and Moore finished seventh, if I remember looking at it right. But it was a great close race. It really would have been something if Gerhardt won it. And almost amazingly is Alabama, first Heisman Trophy winner, only the second time even somebody finished in the top three. David Palmer finished third once upon a time. But, you know, the program that had a Joe Willie Namath, who we all love and adore here as Jet fans, as well as Kenny Stabler. No Heisman love up until now. Pretty amazing for such a storied program with so many national championships.
Yeah, it's quite shocking. You know, I believe Joe Willie actually came in second one year. So, yeah, that kind of blew me away.
So, Ralph, how about let's shift gears a little bit and move away from the Heisman Trophy and talk about some of the guys who are leaving or, and more importantly, coming back. Some of the biggest news in college football this week was Jake Locker making the announcement, the Washington quarterback, junior quarterback deciding to return for his senior year, even though most people, including ourselves, thought he had a very good chance to be the first quarterback taken in this draft, potentially the number one overall pick in this draft, certainly a top, you know, three or five guy, however you want to put it. He's passing up a lot of potential money, particularly with, you know, the CBA could be different next year, where if you have salary slotting for these rookies, they're not going to get the big first contract like guys are getting now. He could be leaving $30, $40 million on the table, even if he ends up being the first overall pick in 2011. Let's start there. What are your thoughts with Jake Locker and his decision to come back to school?
Yeah, it surprised me because I thought that he probably was going to be the first quarterback taken. I know that if I were a GM, I would have certainly have taken him first among all quarterbacks out. You know, he's taking a chance. He's taking a chance because of where he's going to get picked if he enters the draft. And so he's taking a chance because of the type of quarterback that he is. He is a running quarterback, and because of that, he's a guy that puts himself at risk of injury more than a lot of other quarterbacks. You know, I know that, you know, everything worked out for guys like Peyton Manning, who also came back for his senior year, but Peyton Manning's a different type of player, more of a drop-back type of passer. So, look, I can totally understand why he came back. You know, he is a great coach, Sarkisian, when it comes to developing quarterbacks. So if he stays healthy, he can definitely benefit from another year in college. But again, he is taking a chance. And so while I understand why he did what he did, you know, if that were me, I'd probably come out.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with it. I mean, from one perspective, you can say, hey, in terms of his long-term development, this might be the best move, particularly because, you know, even though he's a junior, he did go through some injuries last season. And up until this year, his legs and his running, as you mentioned, were probably the strength of this game, and he was in more of a spread offense. This year under Sarkisian, he's starting to play a little more traditional quarterback, which I think will help him, and another season in that system will help him. And, you know, we can go through the guys, and you know, it isn't clear cut that coming back for 4 years is a benefit, but hey, there's something to be said for guys like Jamarcus Russell and a lot of juniors that have declared that have floundered in the NFL. But at the same time, you're risking a lot in terms of security. And look at Sam Bradford, you know, who wasn't a running quarterback, and his injury. I thought for sure, you know, with Sam Bradford right there in front of you, and the potential of the CBA structure changing the salary structure for rookies, that it was a lock for him to go. But hey, I mean, if he comes back, and good for him, if he's going to enjoy college. I'm not one to tell other people how they should live their lives, but it was definitely a surprising move. Ralph, do you think had he declared, he would have been the clear-cut number one quarterback?
I think so. I mean, just based on potential, based on his overall physical tools. You know, we're talking about not only a guy who can run and a guy who can throw, who's got a good arm, but we're talking about a big, strong guy who has an NFL body already. You know, he's got the height, he's got the strength. I mean, not only is he a player who's fast, who probably runs a 4.4, but he's a guy who breaks tackles. He's a guy who's hard to bring down. You know, I mean, I know this might be a little premature, but to me, I mean, he looks like another version of John Elway, or, you know, when you consider all the different types of tools that he brings to the table.
So in a nutshell, you're saying he's the favorite to win the Heisman next season?
Not necessarily. I actually have a dark horse there, and
Now that we brought it up, who's the dark horse, real quick?
Yeah, well, the guy I like, and I mentioned this to Dan before, is kid who for Virginia Tech, Ryan Williams. I love the way this kid plays, and I think that if they feature him enough and in the right way, I think this kid would be almost unstoppable.
And that would be a fourth straight sophomore after never having a sophomore win the award if Brian Williams did win it. I think it's funny, you know, I actually wrote about this last year after the Heisman. Here are some sophomores to look out for next season, because it's amazing how before Tebow did it, it was such a huge thing, like, oh, you can't vote for a sophomore. And now after Tebow did it, it's as if, you know, people don't even bring it up anymore as an issue. Oh, he's only a sophomore. Does he deserve to win it? Which I'm glad, because that should be irrelevant. I don't remember if it was his freshman year or his sophomore year, but I thought for sure Marshall Faulk should have won the Heisman Trophy one season, and because he was an underclassman, he didn't get the votes. Ralph, I know you got to run. Thanks a lot for joining us and giving us your insight. Hopefully we'll talk to you. Maybe we'll get you on to talk a little bit about the Penn State Nittany Lions in a couple weeks.
All right, definitely. Looking forward to it.
All right, coming up next, we have Kelron Sykes, our super scout. He'll be talking about a couple of the bowl games. And we've been talking about guys leaving early and staying. Kelron, how's it going today?
What's going on, Daniel? How's it going?
Pretty good, man. Everyone, we're listening to College Football Insiders Radio, and joining us now is Kelron Sykes, our super scout. He's also based out there on the West Coast, played at Oregon State, so he knows the Pac-10 inside and out. If you want to call in, the number is 347-945-6275, or you can jump in the chat room. And, Kelron, I know we were going to focus primarily on the bowl games, but we were just talking about Jake Locker and his decision to come back and potentially pass up NFL millions. Do you got any thoughts on that?
You know, he could definitely, you know, certify himself next year as being the number one quarterback for the class of 2010. You know, I think him and Jevon Snead aren't running for that next season. But, you know, this class is pretty much, I wouldn't say loaded, but it's pretty well stocked in terms of the, you know, the quarterback position. You know, you got McCoy. You know, I hear Sam Bradford has put on 10 pounds of muscle, and he's looking good in terms of his throwing now. We don't know Tebow's status in terms of, you know, his stock going into the Senior Bowl next month. So, you know, you got a well variety of quarterbacks out there right now, and I think Locker did a good thing by coming back to school.
All right, now let me ask you about a couple guys who have declared, and if you have any thoughts on those guys. We got three receivers having declared already: Golden Tate, Desmond Briscoe from Kansas, as well as Aurelius Ben from Illinois. Do you got any? You know, you have any thoughts on those guys? You think they all made the wise decision?
Yeah, I think definitely Golden Tate. I mean, Golden Tate, we've been working on his third or fourth offensive coordinator, you know, in his 4 years at you know, there at South Bend. Briscoe has been, he's definitely had a great season this year at Kansas. I mean, he would definitely look right now, just off the top of my head, he's probably a second or third round guy. Aurelius Ben is probably, you know, right behind the kid from Oklahoma State in terms of his stock. I mean, he's a home run hitter with his home run threat. I mean, he definitely, you know, displays great, you know, separation speed, you know, from defenders and whatnot. And he did, I mean, all three of those guys would be high draft picks this season. And, wow, it's going to be interesting in terms of the draft. You know, you're looking at the receiver position as being pretty well stocked. So it's going to be interesting come April.
And before we get to the Las Vegas Bowl, how about Jimmy Clausen, the quarterback, one of the junior quarterbacks who did decide to declare?
Well, like I said, I mean, that goes back to what I just mentioned with Tate. I mean, you're looking at his third or fourth, you know, offensive coordinator, and we don't know what type of offense, you know, they're going to run there in South Bend. You know, he shows some NFL capability, in terms of his deep ball, intermediate throws, and his pocket presence. And those are three keys in terms of what a quarterback needs to possess, and particularly going on to the next level, which is the NFL. And, you know, he's done a great job this season, you know, despite, you know, limited with the talent, maybe one or two guys or three guys on offense that are pretty much are his key players. But nevertheless, you know, he would be definitely a high pick. And, you know, I think he did the right thing in terms of declaring for the NFL draft.
All right, Kelron, let's talk about a couple of these bowl games, Las Vegas Bowl and Poinsettia Bowl, both pit Pac-10 schools against Mountain West schools, kind of a doubleheader on the 22nd and 23rd, both on ESPN. I think, like, you know, whatever, what are they, like 30-something bowls? Like, except for two or three,
like
they're pretty much
bowls.
All on ESPN. Yeah, they're pretty much all on ESPN except for the BCS ones. I think there's one on CBS and one on NFL Network, and that's pretty much it. So let's start with the one on the 22nd. Your Oregon State Beavers taking on the BYU Cougars. What's your take there? Do you think your guys will be up for this game after, you know, having that 9-point lead in the third quarter and being so close to making the Rose Bowl?
Yeah, that game was heartbreaking to see that. I mean, we had a couple of key possessions there where we need to have scored or have gotten some kind of points out of that, and we failed to do that. And I think it's going to all start with Sean Canfield. Can he, you know, run the table in terms of having key possessions and putting the offense in key positions to score. I mean, definitely, you know, we have, you know, the Rodgers brothers who are definitely weapons on offense. But, you know, Ken Canfield, can he be productive offensively in terms of his throws, in terms of his decision-making and whatnot? And that's going to be key to this game because BYU, they're going to come out. We know they're going to score. You know, Max Hall does a great job in terms of putting points on the board. And, you know, Dennis Peter and that, Matt, you know, that combo right there is pretty good. But can OSU control the clock? Can they be productive? Can they score, you know, in crucial situations? That's going to be the key going into this game.
I really like Oregon State in this football game. I think all season long they've been pretty underrated. I know the four games that they lost were all, you know, within reach. But back to Max Hall. How do you think the secondary is going to be able to handle the amount of times BYU throws?
Well, it depends on the pressure. How, you know, can they protect? You know, that's going to be the key. I mean, you know, if Sean Poole can get pressure up the middle, you know, for us, you know, that'll be obviously key and whatnot. You know, we have young DBs in the secondary and whatnot, and it'll be a good matchup.
I mean, when BYU played Florida State, I think that was the reason why the Seminoles were able to win the game that they did, even though BYU was able to put up some points on Florida State. I think consistently they always were in the face of Max Hall, and if history shows anything, I think Max Hall has a lot of trouble when it comes to dealing with a lot of pressure, like most quarterbacks.
Yeah, well, like you, I think you just hit the nail on the head. I think if you pressure Max Hall, and particularly up the middle, and obviously get that edge pressure, it rattles him some. I mean, that's one of his biggest downfalls, you know, from a scouting perspective, that, you know, he does get rattled in the pocket somewhat. But if Oregon State can do that, I think they pull off the victory.
All right, Calron, before I ask you for the solidified prediction, I need you to make me one promise.
Yes, sir.
Promise me it won't be a 3-0 game like last year's Sun Bowl against Pitt, man. That was a tough one to watch.
Oh, yeah, it was. It was real tough. No, if both teams come in healthy, I can assure you that, you know, both teams will at least put up 21 points, at least.
All right, so what's your prediction here for the game?
You know, I got OSU, obviously. I know you look at Bronco Mendenhall, which is a former Oregon State coach. It's going to be a great matchup, but nevertheless, I think OSU is too many weapons. I mean, too much riding on into next season and whatnot, and I think Oregon State wins by at least 10 points.
Chris, what do you think? You agree?
No, yeah, if I was forced to pick this game, I would definitely go with Oregon State. They're the better team from top to bottom, and I think just because they're not playing on January 1st and they lost a tough game to Oregon and could be in the Rose Bowl, I don't think that's going to be a factor. I think they're going to come out and they're going to win the game.
Mike Riley is one of the better coaches in terms of game preparation out there, and I think he'll do a good job in terms of getting those guys ready and getting those guys geared up to play this game.
Since we're talking about Oregon State right now, I got to give a lot of kudos for them for scheduling Boise State and playing some of these schools from the non-big conferences who've been in the rankings recently. How do you feel about the fact that Oregon State's doing something like that?
And they're playing TCU as well.
Yeah, the TCU game is coming up. I mean, that's kudos to the athletic directors and the prior football coaches, you know, getting that schedule together in terms of, you know, hey, these are some teams that, you know, may be prolific in the years to come. And you get those guys on the schedule, you know, that makes it all better, you know, the latter part of the season, so to speak. So kudos to those guys for that
schedule. And this is not the first time they've done it before, because they played at Fresno State back when Fresno State had a decent program. I really like what the Pac-10 schools are doing. I know Oregon obviously just played Boise State this year, but it seems like Oregon State consistently always doesn't have a soft out-of-conference schedule, and they go out and they play these teams.
Yes, I mean,
like Utah, right?
Back to the LSU game a couple years ago when they went down to Baton Rouge and played, and it was a real close game, and, you know, just springboarded from there. So, you know, that was a springboard in terms of the success of the program. You know, that let the Beaver fans know, as well as the world know, that the Pac-10 can play with these upper echelon schools. So, you know, that was kudos to the program there.
And they played Utah last year, so they're not afraid on the road. So that's what you like, is they give these programs like a Utah, like a Boise State and TCU, even though it won't be at TCU, you know, they're in Fort Worth, the game is going to be in Dallas. So basically it's a home game for TCU, but they go on the road to play these schools when, hey, come on, USC, man up, let's go.
Yeah,
go out there and play these guys on the road. Go to that blue field. See how you do.
Yeah, now you know, speaking of SC, I think, you know, it's going to be a situation for them where they have to win this bowl game coming up. you know, versus Boston College. I mean, you know, they have an abundance of talent coming back, but it was a real letdown season for Pete Carroll and the crew and whatnot. But, you know, it was a big adjustment. You know, you lost a bunch of the coaches that went up to UW and whatnot, but I think they're a top-five team next year, and I think they'll come out next year, you know, with the sense of urgency to play next year and get back to the upper echelon, you know, of premier football across the country.
I think USC did catch a little bit of a break, though. Despite an 8-4 record, I do consider BC one of the lower echelon teams in the ACC. I think I would have been more worried if they got a different team like North Carolina with a stronger defense, but I do agree with you there.
Yes, I mean, like you said, North Carolina probably would have possessed a little bit more athletic ability, you know, across the board in terms of the position of receiver, D-line, and whatnot. You know, Marvin Austin, who's, you know, probably going to declare for the draft, who probably will be a first-round guy, you know, he'd have gave USC fits up the middle. So, you know, that probably was lucky for them to avoid that matchup.
Plus, they don't have to travel far, L.A. to Frisco. I think USC, I agree with all the holes about them this season, but I think in this bowl game, I think they're going to take the Emerald Bowl. If you want to just continue to talk a little bit more about the Emerald Bowl and USC and their matchup with BC.
Well, like I said, I mean, you got the young freshman there. You know, he's made some crucial mistakes and whatnot. And, you know, Damian Williams, they seem like they weren't on the same pace this year. You know, with Stephon Johnson going down early in the season, that broke up some of the continuity within the offense. You know, nevertheless, you know, McKnight stepped up and had a huge year. But it just seemed to never be any consistency with the program there, and particularly offensively or defensively. I mean, when have you seen an SEC defense just get dismantled, you know, week in and week out? I mean, that's been unheard of under the Pete Carroll era. But nevertheless, they're a young group, and I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt of having lost Sarkisian. You know, having lost, you know, their defensive coordinator, Nick Holt, to UW. So it would be some time. I give them next year, and they should be back in the top five in terms of them just dominating the Pac-10 once again.
All right, Kelron, let's move on and talk about that Poinsettia Bowl, which, as I mentioned earlier, like the Las Vegas Bowl, features a Pac-10 school against a Mountain West school. It's Utah versus Cal. And, you know, like Coach Riley from Oregon State, who's undefeated in bowl games, Coach Whittingham from Utah is also undefeated in bowl games. We'll be hearing from him shortly. What's your take on this game?
Well, obviously, you know, we're there. Cal's going to be minus Jabbie Best, who's probably still, I think, still the best running back in the country. But nevertheless, Vereen and those guys, Kevin Riley, if they come to play, I think they probably outmatch, you know, the Utah Utes in terms of just playmaking ability. Nevertheless, Whittingham is undefeated. They do have possess some playmakers in Eddie White and, you know, David Reed and whatnot. But I just think, you know, I'm a Pac-10 homer, and I go with the Pac-10 in this matchup.
All right. Kelron, thanks a lot for joining us and giving us some time. And we'll talk to you again next week, see how your Pac-10 boys do, and we'll talk about more bowl games coming up.
Thank you. I will talk to you soon, Daniel.
All right. That was Kelron Sykes, our Super Scout. Played some pro football, coached some college football, obviously an Oregon State alum, so he'll be rooting for the Beavers. This is College Football Insiders Radio, brought to you by All Access Football Radio. Don't forget, go to fsc.fm, that's fsc.fm, for your fantasy sports news. And right now, we'll hear from Coach Kyle Whittingham of the Utah Utes. Joining us now in this College Football Insider's Coach's Corner is head man Kyle Whittingham of the Utah Utes. Utah is ranked 23rd in the BCS standings after a 9-3 season, and they'll be playing in the Poinsettia Bowl against the Cal Golden Bears. Hi, Coach. How you doing today?
Doing very well. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Excited for the bowl season to get started. Now, you know, you've done pretty well in the bowls, 4-0 so far there at Utah. What's the secret to your success?
Well, you know, I don't think there is any magical approach to a bowl game as far as what you do. It's how you do it. And our players, you know, even though we have a model in place that we've used for several years that we really think is a pretty good system, it's the work ethic and the focus and the concentration and the attention to detail players put into it. That really is the key. You know, it's like anything else in life. It's 25% what you're doing and 75% how you're doing. Our players understand that a bowl is a reward, but at the same time, it's an opportunity for them to win another game and to keep that in perspective.
And, you know, talk a little bit about the development of your freshman quarterback there, Jordan Wynn, the decision to go to him, and how he played down the stretch.
Yeah, we think he's going to be a great one. He got off to a good start this season when we put him in. I think it was week 8 when we made the change. It was the Wyoming game at halftime. You know, we had sputtered on offense in that game. And, I think we only had 3 points at halftime, as I remember. But really, throughout the season and up to that point, we just had never really been in a rhythm offensively. And we were still trying to find that rhythm and that consistency. And we felt at that point in time it was the right time to put Jordan in the game to get a look at him, because he had just been getting better and better in practice. You know, he was pushing for the starting job at the beginning of the season, just got edged out. But as the season wore on in practice, he just continued to get better and certainly deserved the opportunity to show what his capabilities were.
And how important is this time for him? You know, we always hear about how the bowl and the extra practice time are key for freshmen. So to kind of, for him to take a little break from the season and have extra practice time, how much of a leap can a kid like Jordan take from the final game until the bowl?
Well, it's huge for Jordan, as is all the freshmen, like you mentioned. I think most teams in bowl situations take the same approach, where particularly early on in your preparations, you gear things towards those younger players develop those younger players. It's a positive, but particularly when it's a bowl situation and you're just working on fundamentals and techniques. He's a guy that really knows how to practice and work on some efficiencies. That's been very good.
Yeah, you obviously had to replace Johnson, your quarterback. You knew that heading into the season. You had your running back coming back in Matt Asciata, but he went down, and Eddie Wide stepped in and played tremendous football. Talk about how big he's been for the offense all around.
Well, he's been huge for what we've been able to accomplish offensively, and for him to come in when Matt went down and proceed to gain 1,000 yards, that's an outstanding accomplishment for Eddie. Now, we've always been high on Eddie. We knew that he was a very talented player. We knew that recruited him out of Nevada. He was the Gatorade Player of the Year in the state of Nevada. And we knew we had a back that was very good. But to say that I sat here and knew that he was going to come in and rush for 1,000 yards, and I didn't see that coming. So what he's given this football team and the boost that he gave the running game when that went down was invaluable to our success.
Now, you also have some really key players on the defensive side of the ball. Talk about those senior leaders, and I'm talking about safety Robert Johnson, defensive end Comisi, and of course linebacker Stevenson Sylvester, who kind of lead their respective units.
Yeah, those guys have been great leaders for us this year, and that really is what, I've never been a part of a football team that was successful that didn't have good leadership, and those guys provided that for us. You mentioned Robert, and Joe Dale is the safety that plays right next to him, who's a senior as well, has been a leader for us. And the linebacking core, that's all seniors, that linebacking core. You mentioned Sly. And we also have Kepa Geisen and Mike Wright who play alongside Sly there with in that linebacking core that really is the heart and soul of our defense. And then Cole up front, he's just a playmaker. He doesn't say a lot. He's one of those guys that leads by example rather than what he says. But his work ethic, his performance on the field is second to none.
Those are the kind of players coaches love.
That's exactly right. Just shut up and get it done. but you need the other kind of leaders as well. You need someone to speak up when they need to speak up if things aren't going as they should. And we have a bunch of those guys too. Really, Sly is the leader in that respect.
And we're talking to Coach Kyle Whittingham of the 23rd ranked Utah Utes in the BCS standings. They'll be taking on Cal in the Poinsettia Bowl. And, Coach, people still, when they think Mountain West, they don't think defense right away. And, we just talked about a bunch of outstanding defensive players. And talk about how you guys are going to match up against this Cal offense next week, December 23rd.
Well, hopefully we can match up favorably. They're a very talented team. They've got exactly what you'd expect out of a quality Pac-10 opponent. That's a lot of speed, a lot of athleticism, physical up front on both sides of the ball. You know, the tailback best, we understand, will not be playing, but you know, the number two guy, Marie, is a very capable back. He's rushed for about 750 yards this year, and so really our game plan, you know, hasn't changed, won't change, never change based on who's playing tailback, because they're both very good backs, and so you know, that's what they are offensively. Defensively, I think the word that describes them best is active. They're very active. They run the football. They play with great effort. And they've got some spectacular players on the defensive side of the ball. Al, the defensive lineman, number 44, is a tremendous player. They've got a linebacker in their corner. We're both very good as well.
Yeah, Mike Muhammad and Saquon Thompson. Coach, before we let you go, one big picture question. Talk about the significance of having two teams from the non-BCS conferences making it to BCS bowls in Boise and TCU out of your conference.
Well, I think that, you know, just speaking from a Mountain West Conference standpoint, that's, what, the third time in the last 6 years now that a Mountain West team was represented in the BCS. You know, us in 2004 at the Fiesta Bowl, and then again last year at the Sugar Bowl, and of course, TCU this year, and so I think we're making a strong statement and a very good case for when the reevaluation comes up, which I understand is in a couple of years, for becoming an automatic qualifying course. You know, obviously, we're only halfway home. It's 2 years into it. We've got 2 years to go. But if we continue to make the inroads in these next couple of years that we've made in the last few years, then I think we have a very solid case for perhaps getting that AQ status.
All right, Coach, thanks a lot for joining us today, and we wish you luck in that bowl game.
Okay, Dan, appreciate you having me on. Thank you.
All right, folks, we're going to keep it flowing with the interviews here. That was Coach Kyle Whittingham, who will be coaching the Poinsettia Bowl, his Utah Utes, against the Cal Golden Bears. Coming up now, we have our interview from the Marriott Marquis that we did with Joe Shad following the Heisman Trophy presentation. Joining us now on College Football Insiders Radio here at the Marriott Marquis, live from the Heisman Trophy. We hear the celebrating in the background. It's Joe Shad from ESPN. Hey, Joe, how's it going?
Doing well.
Thanks for joining us here. Big week in college football. So I just heard you talking and saying that Mr. Sue and Damakon Sue, the defensive tackle from Nebraska, was the man who got your vote. So let's start there. Why do you think Sue was the most deserving of the Heisman?
Well, on the Heisman ballot, it said that you're supposed to vote for the most outstanding player. And I know it's a non-traditional vote to vote for a defensive player. But, you know, I was at the game against Texas. I saw him throw Colt McCoy around like a rag doll. I thought that he was the most dominant, most outstanding player of the season. That said, I do understand why it's so much more difficult for a defensive player to win. And I did correctly predict that Mark Ingram of Alabama would win the trophy.
It doesn't say most outstanding offensive skill player. I thought that's what it said on the ballot.
No, it doesn't. No? And if it said skill, I might have had to go to C.J. Spiller of Clemson, who was on my ballot. It was a tough call between Spiller and Toby Gerhardt, who I did leave off.
So Gerhardt wasn't on your ballot. He was second, one of the closest finishes, you know, from, you know, 1 through 4, 1 through 3. Joe, you know, talk about just that concept of the defensive guy. You know what I mean? I talked to other people that said, hey, they didn't really think about him until late in the process. A couple of people told me that they didn't vote for him and wish they had voted for him. Do you think, you know, teams, schools should start promoting these guys earlier for the Heisman, and would that make a difference?
Yeah, you know, I really didn't think that he had a chance to win, and maybe I did put too much credence into what he did in the Texas game, because prior to that game, I probably wouldn't have had him among my top three. I probably would have had him fourth, but it is pretty amazing that Ingram won the trophy despite a subpar performance against his rival in the penultimate week of Alabama's season against Auburn, and I was there for that game, and after that game, I thought that Ingram had been eliminated. So, you know, certainly heavy emphasis placed on end of season. Certainly heavy emphasis placed on team win and loss record. Maybe a little bit too much. Maybe we need to assess those factors less.
All right, now let's move on from this and talk a little bit about the bowl games. What do you think about the big, let's start with the big one, you know, Alabama, Texas. If we went off our last impression, you know, Alabama looked a lot more impressive than Texas did that last weekend.
is that going to follow through, or do you think the Longhorns are going to be tired of hearing about how they got lucky to win and how they probably can't hang with the big bad Crimson Tide?
You know, one interesting element as we sit here at the Heisman Trophy and watch Nick Saban walk past us here in the dining area is that with Colt McCoy having lost, he did seem somewhat irritated, perhaps just the fact that he didn't answer more questions about, you know, not winning. But, you know, not to the extent that Vince Young was a few years ago when he went out and used it as motivation to help upset USC. But, you know, I think McCoy will use it a little bit as motivation for Nick Saban, has a little bit of a concern about whether or not Ingram will eat too much of that banquet chicken on the banquet tour. But listening to Ingram tonight, he seemed pretty focused. Listen, there's no doubt the majority of people are going to pick Alabama. It figures to be a defensive struggle, but you're right. A Texas defense appeared vulnerable at times, but more than anything, they really never established a rushing game, and that's one edge that Alabama will clearly have.
Now, outside of the big game, we're talking to Joe Shad here from ESPN. We're at the Marriott Marquis on location. The Heisman Trophy was just awarded moments ago. Joe, other than the big game, which bowl game kind of excites you? You know, it's just if you're just a fan and you just wanted to watch a game for pure enjoyment, which game would you circle?
Well, you know, I criticized the Fiesta Bowl's choice to select TCU and Boise State, but from a pure football purist standpoint, when that game comes around, I will be very excited to watch it, to watch Kellen Moore, Boise State against TCU's stout defense. There's some good non-BCS games to watch for, including Oklahoma versus Stanford, even though Stanford quarterback Andrew Luck won't play in that game.
Right.
I think, you know, Pittsburgh, North Carolina is a big game. Certainly Florida State's final game under Bobby Bowden against West Virginia, also an interesting game to watch for.
Great test for Gerhardt for the next level. I mean, how he performs against that Oklahoma defense.
Yeah, Gerald McCoy, the defensive tackle at Oklahoma, is somewhat similar to Ndamukong Suh, the Nebraska defensive tackle. Maybe a little quicker. So it should be a very interesting matchup, Oklahoma's front seven against Stanford's running attack.
We're almost 5 minutes into this interview. Tim Tebow's name hasn't come up, and it's the Heisman Trophy. Let's talk about the next level. You know, where do you stand on Tebow? I know your focus is on college. We do a lot of draft as well once the season's over. What are your thoughts on Tebow and the next level? Do you think he'll play quarterback in the NFL, or will he be a good quarterback?
I think that Tebow's future is probably at a different position. I think that, you know, with the way the NFL game has evolved, that he might very well have an opportunity to be used as a specialty quarterback.
Right.
/ H-back, / tight end. You know, I don't know about tight end, but H-back certainly. You know, fullback. I mean, he might not want to hear it, but, and I hope he gets an opportunity to play quarterback. But even though he will go down as one of the greatest players in college football history, having covered both pro and college football, I'm acutely aware of the fact that there's really no correlation at all from the NFL scouts and NFL general managers as to translating success in the college game. They'll look at him and say he has a slow delivery. They'll look at him and say he has an awkward delivery. It won't matter that his catching efficiency numbers are high. They'll say that he didn't throw the most catchable ball and that he's physically almost overdeveloped. I mean, he's so muscular, especially from a lower body perspective, that he really looks the part of a linebacker, that he just doesn't fit the prototypical mold in the NFL. It's all about prototype.
Yeah, there's, you know, tons and tons of Heisman guys that haven't done well at the next level. You know, we were at the thing on Tuesday with the Hall of Fame. Geno Torres is a guy that was, you know, a Heisman Trophy winner, didn't really do as well at the next level. Joe, you know, before we let you go here, what do you think of the hiring of Brian Kelly for the Notre Dame Fighting Irish? Is that the right move?
It's a good hire. It's a smart hire. I think it's a hire Notre Dame had to make. He was the obvious choice, and sometimes the obvious choice is the right choice. You know, assuming that we're not going to have any chance at landing a slam-dunk candidate, a known quantity such as, you know, Bob Stoops or Urban Meyer, Kelly had to be at the top of the next group. You know, he's the hottest coach in America. He's brought Cincinnati to two consecutive BCS games. You know, he won't coach him this year. In the Sugar Bowl, and there's no doubt that Kelly is a much more likable personality than Charlie Weiss, and he is also a proven head coach and CEO.
He's definitely not Jersey Gruff, that's for sure.
No, he's a Massachusetts politician.
And what is your take on the players' reaction to this? You know what I mean? I really do. I understand what Kelly did, and I don't want to criticize him because this is the system that exists.
Yeah, they just don't understand.
It's
Marty
tough for the kids, though.
Yeah, it's always going to be tough, but, you know, it's a business, and you say, well, if it's a business, they should get paid, but that's a whole other story. You know, I mean, Marty Gilliard is leaving school. I mean, yeah, maybe he feels because he came back in part for Brian Kelly for his senior year that, you know, Kelly owes it to the school, but, you know, nobody can blame Brian Kelly for going from Cincinnati to Notre Dame. I mean, that's a no-brainer.
Now, you're Mr. Insider with all the coaching stuff. Anything you got for us here? Any scoops of what's going on in the coaching
change? Well, we know that Turner Gill, the Buffalo coach, will be named the Kansas coach. At Cincinnati, I would look to Central Michigan's Butch Davis, maybe Temple Dow Golden as two strong candidates. And, other than that, not as many huge jobs this year available as in the past.
All right, Joe, thanks a lot for giving us a couple minutes.
You got it, man. Thank you.
All right, we'll be bringing on right now one of our very own insiders, Mr. Kenny Pranick, who's been covering the BCS Busters for us all season long. Hey, Kenny, how's it going today?
It's going good. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Sorry, Mr. Joe Shack cut into some of your time over here, but we got some minutes here. We got a few minutes left here to talk about some of these bowl games next week. Let's start with the first bowl game on Saturday to kick it all off, the New Mexico Bowl, Fresno State against Wyoming. Break it down for us, buddy.
I like Fresno State in this game. Obviously, they got Ryan Matthews, you know, over 1,600 yards, 17 touchdowns. Fresno State is, I mean, you look at their number, 34 points per game, 28 allowed, and you look at Wyoming, they average 17 per game and give up 27. I mean, their offense has looked abysmal. They've had three games this year where they've gotten shut out. Curtis Samuels really needs to step up his game and really locate his receivers, which he's had a hard time doing this year. And you look at Fresno State, the teams they lost to is Texas, Colorado, Air Force, Utah, BYU, and TCU. All pretty good teams, I think we can agree on. I really like Fresno State to come out firing and using Matthews to the best of his ability, and I see them jumping out to an early lead and not losing it.
Yeah, it's hard to agree with that. I think Fresno is just flat out the better team, but I will point out, hey, great year for Wyoming. Dave Christensen, the former offensive coordinator at Missouri, year one, takes him to a bowl game. I don't think you can ask for anything more there from that program moving up in what is becoming a more and more difficult Mountain West Conference. The next game is the St. Petersburg Bowl. I'll throw this out to you, to both of you guys. Chris is with me here, our Big East guy. So we got Rutgers versus Central Florida. Chris, I'll throw it to you first. How big of this game is this for Rutgers? And then, Kenny, let me know if the Knights of Central Florida have a chance against the Scarlet Knights.
You know, obviously, when you look at Rutgers, they were in hopes that they would be a Big East contender, but still an 8-win year with an opportunity to get 9 wins is would be an accomplishment. But I think the fact that they have all these young players who have a lot to prove, I mean, quarterback Savage and a lot of young receivers,
Sanu
and some young guys on defense, I think they're going to be up for this game, even though the fact that it's the St. Peter's Bowl, you may not think so, but I think Rutgers, they're going to come into the game strong, and I think if those guys like Savage and Sanu and Tim Brown are playing at a high level, it's going to be tough for them to lose to Central Florida.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, I mean, you got to look at UCF's defense, though. I mean, they have the top two leaders in sacks in the conference and defensive ends, Bruce Miller and Jarvis Gathers. And if you look at their losses, they lost to Southern Miss, East Carolina, Miami, and Texas. Once again, all quality losses. You can't blame them for having a tough schedule. Then again, you know, they did get blown out by a couple of those teams. But I think their defense is good enough to keep them in this game, especially if they can attack Savage early and get him rattled. And, they have Rutgers have their wide receiver Tim Brown over 1,000 yards, averages 20.6 per catch. But, I mean, if he can't utilize him as a playmaker and they take him out of the game, I mean, that might be their downfall. And I think UCF could capitalize and maybe get a couple of turnovers by getting to the quarterback.
I also am intrigued by a little bit by the coaching matchup, George O'Leary versus Greg Schiano.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Intrigued by the coaching matchup between George O'Leary and Greg Schiano. I just like the coaching matchup between the two.
I do, but see, me, I don't look at it from a coaching perspective. I mean, the players, personally, I think people put a little too much on the whole coaching thing. I mean, yes, it obviously does come into play. But, the players are the ones that are on the field doing all the work. So you got to look at it from that perspective. And really, I think it's kind of more of an even matchup than people think this game is going to turn out to be. And I think UCF has something to prove, too. They're trying to make a name for themselves the last couple of years. So I think this is a big, statement game for them. So I think they're going to come out fired up.
Okay, Sunday, give the people out there, they'll be watching NFL football all day long. Gives them a reason to tune into that New Orleans Bowl Sunday night, Southern Miss versus Middle Tennessee State. What might they see if they check that one out on ESPN Sunday night?
You're going to see one of the best secondaries in Middle Tennessee State. They led their conference in interceptions on the year. And, I mean, they just put on a good show every time they come out and play. And Southern Miss, they got – one of the best big receivers in college football, and DeAndre Brown. So it should be interesting to see the size of the secondary for Middle Tennessee State go up against someone of a caliber of and a receiver of his size, and see if they can contain him.
Yeah, I agree. That's a fun matchup there. We talked about the BYU Oregon State matchup earlier with Calron Sykes, and between the three of us, all of us have Oregon State winning that Las Vegas Bowl. In my opinion, Oregon State is one of the more underrated teams. I actually think BYU might be a little overrated, and Max Hall has never really impressed me in a big spot against a bigger school. This year they got creamed by Florida State. They got creamed by TCU. Can BYU hang in this game at all?
They can. I mean, you look at each team has the big three on offense. Oregon State has Sean Canfield, quarterback, Jaquizz Rodgers, and James Rodgers at wide receiver. And then you look at BYU, they have Max Hall, who has thrown 30 touchdowns. I mean, he does have the 14 picks on the year, but he can be accurate with the ball and post big numbers. His main target, Dennis Pitta, tight end for them, and their running back, Harvey Unga. So they match up on offense fairly evenly, and if you look at their numbers, BYU 35 points per game, giving up 22, Oregon State 32, giving up 23. I mean, both marginal defenses, so really I think it's going to come down to, can Hall, play good football and not turn the ball over? If he does, I think that's where their downfall is going to lie, and I think Oregon State has too potent of an offense that even a minimal mistake is going to cost them the game.
All right, then finally we have the Poinsettia Bowl, Utah versus Cal. Once again, the Mountain West looking to represent against the Pac-10. Utah under Whittingham has been perfect in bowl games. Who do you like here?
I like Utah. They're the more balanced team out of the two. Cal, if you notice, they've kind of hit that peak at mid-season, and now they've kind of gone downhill. They're averaging nearly 40 points per game in the first half, and just about mid-20s the last half of the season. They will be without Javid Best, and their defense allows too many points. Besides, Riley's thrown 5 picks in his last 6 games, so it looks like he hasn't improved. He's actually gotten worse as the season's gone along, which I think you look at Utah's defense, they got playmakers at every level. Koemisi, defensive ends, Stevenson Sylvester, linebacker, and Robert Johnson, cornerback. I mean, they have playmakers at every level on defense, and I think that they're going to rattle Riley early, and I think he will throw a couple interceptions, which is going to be too much for them to overcome.
All right, Kenny, thanks a lot for joining us. We're winding out on the show. And hopefully we can get you on again next week to talk about some of the BCS Buster teams in the bowl games.
Yep. Go Bubble Busters.
Thanks, Kenny. All right, folks, we're winding down, as I said, here on this College Football Insiders radio show brought to you by All Access Football. Much thanks to the Fantasy Sports Network. Go to fsc.fm to check that out. And don't forget, go to NFL Draft Bible. Tomorrow you'll be able to download the newsletter with on-location reports on Mark Ingram, Ndamukong Suh, Tim Tebow, Toby Gerhardt, as well as our final top 25. We have John Asamoah from Illinois, one of the top guards in the country, Q&A with Hall of Famer Pat Swilling as well. All the bowl game previews from Saturday up until December 31st. It'll cover you for 2 weeks. Don't forget, NFLDraftBible.com. Check it out. Download it.